Sunday the 27th of June, Tesva of Tammuz, Rabbi Naftali Reich, getting into growth mode.
Good morning, everybody. One of the most fundamental and important characteristics that we have to have in life is the motivation to move on to the next stage in life. You know, as we read, go through the davening each morning, obviously it's hard to focus, and we're not capable of concentrating and focusing and absorbing the message of every line in the Siddur. But it's worthwhile once in a while just to pause, press the pause button, and just allow a particular pasuk to savor the meaning, extrapolate a little bit from the simple text, savor it a little bit. There's one pasuk that is one of my favorite pause stops, and that is the pasuk we say in Ashrei every morning. Hashem, open up your hands, umazbia, satiate, l'chol chai, to all living creatures, ratzon, willingly, with desire. Give them life. And perhaps we could change it a little bit. Read into it a little bit more. Poisechas yadecha. Hashem, please open up your hands. Umazbia l'chol chai ratzon. And satiate all of life with ratzon, with desire, with the willingness and the motivation to grow. HaKadosh Baruch Hu implanted in the material physical world a strain, an energy to grow. We put a little seed in the ground and it's stuck. It's encrusted in Mother Earth. How's it going to get out? But it pushes and it pushes and it yearns to break out of its shell, break out of the material earth, and it surfaces a little root. And it continues to grow until it becomes a beautiful tree. And the tree keeps on growing. It wants to touch the heavens. And that's a very essential and fundamental, a very important character trait. And the minute we're not capable of growing, we're losing the ability to move on to the next stage of our growth. We're losing, in a sense, the purpose of life itself. We have to counter that spiritual force of growth that wants us to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We have a material physical body that pulls us down. And in our physical body, we're lethargic. It's comfortable. We want to stay where we are. And that's the greatest impediment to our spiritual growth. We find Klal Yisrael in Egypt, and it's mind-boggling when we think about it, but the simple pshat of Chazal is, Chazal tell us, V'chamushim olu b'nei Yisrael meretz Mitzrayim, 4/5 of the Jewish people remained in Egypt. They perished in the plague of darkness. Why? Because as Chazal said, they didn't want to go out. They were comfortable with the darkness of Egypt. Of course, the darkness simply doesn't just mean physical darkness. The choshech, the darkness of Mitzrayim, reflected the physical, the spiritual state of Egypt. Egypt was enveloped in darkness. Klal Yisrael was l'chol b'nei Yisrael hayo'or b'moshvoisom. They were enveloped in light. They were connected to the Shekhinah. Egypt was erves ha'aretz. But the Jewish people that were there, 4/5, it's mind-boggling. Chazal say, halolu oivdei avodah zarah, v'halolu oivdei avodah zarah. Apparently, even if they didn't physically serve the idols of Egypt, but they felt comfortable with the culture. They felt, this is where at least I know, it's better the devil you know than the devil you don't.
Are you uncle?
Yeah. They were, you know, there's a... they did a, this was going back, I remember, about 15, 20 years ago, there was a fellow that was sentenced to about 30-odd years in prison in America. And finally, he was an older gentleman, he was an older fellow, and he came out, he was released from prison, and he rehabilitated himself in prison. He became a very, became at the end, he was already respected, he was a mentor to other prisoners, reformed himself. And finally, he was released from prison, And they noticed there was an interesting phenomenon. He came out of prison. It was a very publicized release because his crime was a very famous crime. He came out of prison, and after a week he couldn't acclimate himself back to regular free life. He came back to the prison authorities and he asked, he wanted to be readmitted. He wanted to be readmitted because in prison he knew, I have my roll call at 5:30, I get up, I have my place, I have my position, I know the ropes. He had a certain ma'amad. His identity was so enmeshed with the prison with the prison schedule. That's where he felt comfortable. Couldn't reacclimate himself. And perhaps in a way, Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim, it's true, it was an avodas perech, and it was a miserable life, and it was a difficult life. Vayitzaku, vayonchu, avodas perech. But you know what? Don't rock my boat. To go out into the wilderness, I don't know, how's the Rebbein Shem going to feed us? How's the Rebbein Shem going to provide for us? It's a whole new spiritual reality. Maybe I'm going to have to give up some creature comforts. I'm going to have to give up the movies they were comfortable with or they were used to seeing. Or maybe even just the foods. Everything we acclimate ourselves, little creature comforts, little things that define the parameters of our life. And they become so integral and so critical to our boat. This is our security. This defines where we feel comfortable, and it's very difficult for us to shed our feathers and move on. Hashem, we ask, I need chayim, I need life. I want to be able to grow. I don't want to be stunted. Give me rotzai. Give me the ability and the motivation to move on. Very, very important. And this is a character trait that is so integral to human nature. We find in the Midbar, Klal Yisrael, we're talking about the fifth, the Klal Yisrael, that they said, Zachati lo chesed niroyach, ahavas kolosoyach, they said, lechtech achrei b'midbar b'eres lo yizorua. They were willing to go into the wilderness. But there's still strains of yearning and longing for what was. Which we ate the Mitzrayim, they were recalling, they were complaining to Moshe, the Mitzrayim, you know, they're living a spiritual reality. They're eating man, lechem aviru machal ish. The clothes are growing with them. They're seeing a Kodesh Baruch Hu. There's an anan ish balayla and an amud anan bayoyim. They see they're living in a wonderful zone. Take us back to Egypt. It would have been better had we just stayed there. There's always a fear of engaging and embracing a new reality. And that's a very important trait that we have to be internalizing. We're ready to move on. We're ready to let go of what was in order to move on. I remember I grew up here in England, in Manchester. Went on to yeshivas in America. And I was about 19, 20 years old. My years from 18 to 20, challenging years, lots of questions. I think that any time that we grow, we go through periods of turbulence, flying solo a little bit in the clouds, and we've got to try and figure out what's our destination, what's our mission, what's our purpose in life, what are our core values. We have questions. I had a lot of questions, and I was looking for someone who I could address the questions to, who I could hear the right answers. Didn't find. At the time I was reading the Nesivos Shalom, Sefer from the Slonim Rebbe. Lived in Eretz Yisrael, and I wrote the Nesivos Shalom a letter, and I said to him, I would love to come to you and ask you my questions, because a lot of the ideas and the thoughts in your sefer, they resonate, and I think that if I could have some time with you, if I came to Eretz Yisrael, and would you devote time to me? He was an old man at the time. I think he was like 75, 78, going back about 30 odd years ago. Huh? Young man. But he wrote me back. He wrote me back. And he said, if you really desire, if you demonstrate the desire to come, you're willing to come, I will make time for you. The Nesiv Shalom used to have, his doors were open every night. People used to come to him every night. He was open from 7 o'clock till 10 o'clock every night. People used to come. And they knew that. And my plane arrived. I decided I'm going to come there and I'm going to be there for Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. I'll have ample opportunity. But I had a lot of burning questions in my mind to ask him. And my plane, when I came, it arrived about 7 o'clock in Ben Gurion. And I was dying. I didn't want to wait a whole day till I could see him the next day. I figured, like, if I could get to Yerushalayim and get into his door before 10 o'clock, then, you know, it's like the department stores. You get in before the door closes, they're not going to throw you out. So I figured that's what I got to do. I was waiting there for my luggage. I remember I was very impatient until I got through customs. I got out about 8:30, quarter to 9. And I realized if I jumped in the Shirut, I wouldn't make it there on time. I took a special, and I came into Yerushalayim. I remember coming in like quarter to 10 into the yeshiva complex where he lived. He has his apartment was there in the yeshiva in Beis Avon. And I came in with my suitcase and all my hand luggage. And I remember coming in there and schlepping up the stairs to his apartment. And in the antechamber, in the room outside his room, there were still a couple of people waiting there, and the gabba was standing there. And I said, you know, I came. He said, oh, yes, I know. I knew you were coming. And he looked at his watch. And he said, you know, it's too late to have an extended time with the Nesiv HaShalom, with the Rebbe now. He said, you know what? Put your stuff in one of the side rooms and you'll go in, you'll say Shalom Aleichem, and he'll make a time with you when he'll meet with you tomorrow. Went into one of the side rooms and I knew, you know, I'd invested so much energy and so much effort, and I worked in a summer camp that summer to be able to have the money for the ticket to come. I wanted to come with an open mind. I wanted it to be a meaningful experience. You know, when you come and you ask, we ask people advice. But really, we know what we want to hear already. We already have our ideas, and we just need a little affirmation. I wanted to come with an open mind. I had this overwhelming feeling, like I'm coming. You know, when you travel, you've got all this paraphernalia in your pocket and change and your passport and everything. I took everything from my pockets and I threw it into my hand luggage. I'm coming with an open mind, open pockets. I didn't know at the time we have a minig, a chasen and a kala go to the chuppah. Nothing in their pockets, nothing tied, because they're coming with an unconditional acceptance, unconditional embrace, no baggage. I emptied out my pockets, and I came into him, gave me a very warm Shalom Aleichem, and he said, you know, if you come to me with empty pockets like a chassan goes to the chuppah, said, I guarantee you, you will leave with your pockets full. Sent a little chill down my spine. I don't know if it was anything like a moifus or anything like that, but sometimes like a telepathy, you can sense where another person is coming from or he felt. But regardless of that, it left me with a very important lesson for life. Made time the next day, went in many times, and it was really molded me gave me a tremendous amount, very, very indebted to the Nesiv HaShalom. But it left me in that first encounter with a very, very important lesson. If we want to move on and we want to grow, we have to empty out our pockets. We have to be willing to discard the way we think till now. We've got to be willing to re-examine. We've got to be willing not to cling to the things that we think are so important. You know, sometimes we get into a certain mindset or a certain mold of a way of thinking, and the minute I've assumed a certain pattern of thinking, it's integral to my identity. And I can't change it, because now I have to reinforce that, and I have to argue on behalf of that way of thinking, because that represents who I am. I can always be open. You know, I can make a 180-degree turn if necessary. It doesn't matter. I can change. I can grow. I can assume a new role. And I realized afterwards the first nisayon that the Torah records for Moshe Rabbeinu. Lech lecha, the Torah tells us everything the Torah writes has a message for eternity, a practical message to each and every one of us. The first words, Lech lecha me'artecha u'mimoyladetecha u'mibeis avicha el ha'aretz Avraham Avinu. Lech lecha me'artecha u'mimoyladetecha u'mibeis avicha el ha'aretz ha'sheyareka. First nisayon, Lech lecha. We want to move forward. We want to grow. Lech lecha, we have to be able to leave me'artzecha, mi'miladetecha, and mi'beis avicha. And of course, all the Sfarim ask a very famous question. The order should be turned the other way around. What should it say? Where do we leave first? If we were leaving Golders Green, first we would leave our homes, then we would leave our town, and then we would leave our country, and we would go to Eretz Yisrael. It should say, Lech lecha, mi'beis avicha, mi'miladetecha, mi'artzecha. It says it the other way around. Everybody asks the question. The Shem Yishmur says a very profound thought. He says, the Nisayon of Avraham Avinu was not simply that Hashem was saying you have to relocate. Relocate? We can all relocate. It's not easy to relocate. Big challenge. Even just moving down the street, changing houses is an ordeal. A big one. But the real challenge of Avraham Avinu laid in a much deeper idea. He'd absorbed from his father's home a pattern, a way of thinking, certain values. Avraham Avinu, his good character wasn't spawned in a vacuum. I'm sure that Terach was a very civic, a gentleman, a role model in society, very respected person. You know, we absorb a values and a patterns of thinking from our environment. People grow up in England. The British, it molds our mentality, our values, the things we enjoy, sports, entertainment. Everything subconsciously by osmosis is changing, is molding the way we think. Our values. An even deeper part of our conditioning is taking place from the city that we live in. We grow up here in London, Golders Green. Our peers, the people who we associate with, have a very profound impression on our value system and what's important to us. But what really ingrains, what shapes our, in the most profound way, our way of thinking, is the home we grow up in. How our parents treated us, how our siblings, our interaction with our family. That changes us, that's indelibly ingrained in who we are, in a very deep way. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Avraham Avinu, you're Nisoyan now, you're going to become a Yid. You're the founding father of Klal Yisrael. You're going to set the foundation stone for Klal Yisrael. And the first Nisoyan is Lech Lecha. I want you to leave for yourself. You have to find yourself. And to find yourself, you have to shed your feathers. You have to leave Arzecha, your land, Aram Naharaim. It represented a culture, a way of thinking. Even deeper, Meiladetcha, but the hardest thing imaginable. Avraham Avinu had to leave Mibeis Avicha, had to leave Terach, not just simply physically leaving his father behind was in his side. But everything his father embodied that he'd absorbed, that was a part of him. He had to disengage and then, of course, not burning his bridges, you can go back and reevaluate, but reevaluate it from your own set of values. That's last, because that's the hardest. It goes in the order, it ascends in the order of challenge. Lech lecha, and that's the yisoid in life. That's the first yisoid. It's integral to every stage. We want to go el ha'oras ha'she'areka to the next stage of our growth. We've got to be able to leave behind. We've got to be willing to leave behind. I once heard from Rabbi Yehuda Leib Whitler, from Geisa, the Mashgiach and Yeshiva there, said a beautiful mashal, and it hit me because it's a mashal. Not just in growth in this world, we want to assume a new level, we want to ascend the pole, we want to nisayon, we want to climb. more importantly, when we all go on El Ha'aretz Asha'ereka to our eternal portion of Atzat HaChayim, it requires that we're capable and able to let go of who we are, to let go of what's important to us, to let go, not to become bound. You know, people become so tied up and bound with material possessions, we're defined by the little, by all the material stuff that surrounds us, by the car we drive and the clothes we wear and the tons of stuff we accumulate in our homes, and it's so integral to us. It's just tools that we need. But we could let go. We've got to be willing to let go to move on, because if it defines who we are, very difficult to assume a new level of closeness to Hashem. Marshall, it's based on a marshal from the Chafetz Chaim, but we gave it contemporary terms. The government initiated a very, very important project, a critical project to national defense. It was very top secret. Nuclear defense, and they had a brain team, the biggest brains in the country. They needed for 6 months to work on this top secret project in a remote location in the northern sky, in Aberdeen somewhere. And this was a very, very important project, and they were able to identify in the country the greatest computer minds and the greatest scientists to develop this new technology that they needed, which was going to be groundbreaking and very critical. It was top secret, of course. And whoever they needed, they told their employer right away, "I'm sorry, we're taking your man for 3 months. You're not going to see him. It's finished. You know, this is the government. The fellow's impounded." And there's a couple of big professors. They left their college posts, their universities. In London, there were two or three people that were identified for this job. And they were told a few days before, Wednesday, Thursday, they had to be Monday morning in Aberdeen for this project. Critical, very, very important, needs right away. They have to leave everything and go up there for 3-4 months. And one of the fellows was a very brilliant computer mind. He came to the airport Sunday morning with all his suitcases and his bags. He booked a ticket. He had a ticket to go there to Aberdeen. The government was going to give him an apartment, a flat over there. And he comes to the airport, and as he's coming up to the gate, the lady looks at him, and she looks, you know, he's got packed in there all his books and his tablecloths and silverware and his summer clothes, and he's got fall clothes, autumn and winter clothes. And he comes there to the airport, he comes up to the gate, and the lady looks at him, and she says, "Sir, I don't think we're going to be able to accommodate you." He says, "What do you mean?" He says, I have my ticket to travel agent here. I'm on this Aberdeen flight. It leaves in 20 minutes. I know I'm here. I'm on time." She says, "No, I don't mean that." She says, she points to the luggage the porter brought along, like, you know, boxes and suitcases, everything that he had, he was taking up there. She says, "I don't think we're going to be able to take that." He says, "What do you mean? This is all my stuff. I need this. What do you mean? I got here my silverware. I'm moving. I'm relocating. It's important." She takes him behind the desk and she shows him there's a little window there that looks down to the tarmac below, and the plane was this little 12-seater propeller plane. It was a little commuter plane. She said, you can bring one small suitcase. You didn't read the fine print. You can bring one small suitcase and one hand luggage. You're not going to, this anchor, the hole can't contain this stuff." Very disappointed. He starts arguing a little bit. She says, "There's nothing to argue about. Look at the plane. This isn't regular plane. This is Sunday morning in the morning to Aberdeen, early morning flight. This is what we have." Anyway, he knows there's no later flight. He's got to leave everything behind. He tells the porter, "This is the critical. He's got to be there. 8 o'clock the following morning, they're all assembling there. Everybody had to be there. He had to sign in. He left the luggage, whatever. Should be. Tried to get it back, it doesn't matter. He stepped onto the plane with a heavy heart, but at least he's going there. He'll be there himself. That's the important thing. 5 minutes after him, another fellow came up to the counter. Huge guy. 200 pounds, big guy. This fellow was also very critical. He had a niche he was a top computer scientist in a particular area that was very important. This project, and he was so proud that he was selected for the team, and he comes up to the gate, and the lady looks at his ticket, and she looks at him, and she says, "So I don't think we're going to be able to accommodate you." He says, "What do you mean? What do you mean? Here's my ticket." And he realizes he's been through this before. He says, you know, he takes out his American Express card, his gold card, and he slaps it down. He says, you know, if I need to buy another seat here, you know, I'll buy another seat. You know, we'll lift up the armrest. She says, "No, sir. I'm sorry." He says, "What do you mean? It's too..." "No," she says, "there's seats on the plane." He says, "What do you mean? Bring the supervisor." She says, "No, come with me. I'm sorry, sir." She takes him behind the desk and she shows him the plane. It's like this little 2-foot door to get into the plane. She says, "You can't fit in. There's no way. We can't accommodate you. You're not going to be able to get into the door." And he says a very important mashal in life. He says, if we accumulate lots of things and it becomes integral to our identity, we can't make the transition to a spiritual zone. We can't move on. Not from this world to the next. We have to let go. We have to be able to let go to move on. It's an unbelievable thing. Klal Yisrael had to go through 210 years in Mitzrayim. I never really understood this. What do we have to go through as a people? We have to go through 210 years. I believe it's Perech. Why couldn't the Rabbeinu Shlom give us the Torah at Har Sinai, put us into a huge national conference, give us some prep talk, get us ready, and we'll go on, we'll march out, and we'll go to Har Sinai? Klal Yisrael to go through an Avodas Perech. The last 80, 90 years, Chazal described the Avodah of the Golos, the Koshi HaGolos, mind-boggling. The Torah calls it a Kor HaBarzel. Metal. Always, if you want it to make it, you want to build its metal, you want to build its strength, its personal strength, it has to go into fire. It has to be broken down in the furnace to its lowest common denominator, and then it reforges itself much stronger. You know, while we have an anoichi, we have a big eye that defines who we are and what we're about and who we think we are. We can't empty out our pockets and assume a new role. It doesn't go. We can't let go. First words of the Rabbeinu Shlom, "Anoichi Hashem Aleikecha, Asher Hoseitzicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim." And the Sfarim say something so beautiful, "Anoichi Hashem Aleikecha." Encapsulated in the first words of the Aseret Dibros is the yesod of our life, the most important characteristic that we need. We have to take the anoichi, the I, the ego, everything that defines the I, anoichi, and melt it down to Hashem Aleikecha, to your will, your Ratzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I want to connect to you. I want to do what's right. I want to live to my innermost values, my core values. I want to live a meaningful way. Everything is just tools. I'm ready to reevaluate. I'm ready to shed my feathers. I'm ready to assume a new role. And Klal Yisrael had to go through that Kor HaBarzel in order to be able to assume a new role. And the Sfarim tell us that all of us, we're entering into the 3 weeks. Very difficult to have a yearning for Mashiach. It's true, we talk about Mashiach, and we think about Mashiach, and we listen to Shiurim about Bias HaMashiach, and we know it's from the Ikrei HaAmuna to be Mamin in Bias HaMashiach, but you know, it's a little scary. Right here, you know, we've got our homes, we've got our cars, we've got our jobs. This is what we know. Lech Teich Achra Bamidbo, who knows, Yemois HaMashiach, we're going to go to Eretz Yisrael, you know, there's always a fear of the unknown. Someone once came to the Chafetz Chaim and he asked a very deep question. And he asked the Chafetz Chaim, he said, "How can I yearn and want Mashiach?" He says, "When Mashiach comes, it's Yomim Asheim Behem Chafetz. There's no Bechira. There's no free choice anymore. When Mashiach comes, we get no reward in Olam Haba for anything anymore. Because doing an Aver is like putting a hand in fire. We lose our Olam Haba. How can I yearn for Mashiach? I'm shooting myself in the leg." And the Chafetz Chaim said, "That's precisely what we need to bring Mashiach. The Rebbein Shem structured the world in such a way that we have to be willing to say, Lech Teich Acharei Bamidbar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is what you want. The whole world should be flooded with Deiras Hashem. It's not about me. I'm willing to give up myself. I'm willing to even give up my Olam Haba. It's about you. And then the Rebbein Shem takes care. There'll be a man, there'll be a be'er, there'll be an aneh covered, whatever the Rebbein Shem will provide. But we're capable of Lech Teich Acharei Bamidbar. Kadosh Baruch Hu should help all of us, each in our own way, should be able to be mekayim the Lech Teich Acharei Bamidbar, the Lech Lecha Me'aretzecha. We should be able to embrace life, Pesechas Yadecha U'masbi'a L'chol Chai Rotzen, by emptying out our pockets all the things that we cling on to for our superficial sense of security. And Rebbein Shem should help all of us. We should be zeichet to see Mashiach.